The Roman Emperor Hadrian ruled the Roman Empire for 21 years. He was the longest-serving emperor since Rome's first emperor, Augustus. Hadrian's legacy, however, is a bit of a tangled mess. On the one hand, he left behind impressive architectural marvels, and his epic journeys across land and sea reinforced the notion that he wasn't just the leader of the imperial capital of Rome, but he was a true representative for tens of millions of people across a vast and diverse commonwealth. And yet, both his early and his later years were strange and shrouded with intrigue and animosity. Near the end of his life, one senator even cursed Hadrian right before he died. And as we'll see today, amid this mess, Hadrian managed to set up a succession plan that ensured two generations of stability. Let's sort out the last years of Hadrian on this episode of the Pax Romana podcast. Episode 40, The Strange Demise of Hadrian. 4 years after the mysterious drowning death of his pederastic lover Antinous on the Nile, Hadrian returned to Italy in AD 134. The emperor was childless, he was getting older, and his health was declining. A peaceful transition of power, even in the Pax Romana, as we have seen, was no guarantee. But Hadrian, if he wanted, could ensure that his death would not spawn another round of civil war if he would just adopt an heir. Hadrian certainly seemed aware of his mortality. He began constructing his mausoleum outside the city of Rome, and we talked a little bit about that building, which is still standing, in episode 37. But constructing the mausoleum was the easy part. The more difficult task, at least for Hadrian, was choosing his successor. As I said, he wasn't able to produce an heir. He also had, we'll just call it, a unique personality. So Hadrian was a perfectionist, and his standards were exacting. This is, as you'll recall, the same emperor who forced his soldiers across the empire to perform maneuvers for him. He inspected their living conditions, he grilled their commanders, and then his feedback he would inscribe on stone so that future generations could be sure to know exactly what he thought about all of these different groups of soldiers. Hadrian also, it won't surprise you to learn, was a micromanager, and so he wanted to dictate not only his immediate successor, but his successor's successors as well. So he had to vet not only Rome's leading men, but also their sons. And then lastly, as we know from episode 36, Hadrian was ruthless, and he would end up breaking his promise to the Senate that he made at the start of his reign. This was a promise that he would not execute senators without a trial. Hadrian had to pick a successor because the guy that was sort of serving as his unofficial successor, a man named Lucius Julius Servianus, was very old, much older than Hadrian. In fact, Servianus was in his 70s when Hadrian took over the empire in AD 117. Other than that, though, the guy was a great pick. He had served as consul twice under Trajan, and he'd served again under Hadrian. But by the year AD 134, Servianus was approaching 90 years old. But he did have a capable grandson. So even if the elderly Servianus died shortly after Hadrian, which of course everyone would have expected, his grandson presumably could take over and rule with some stability for maybe a few decades even. But weirdly, Hadrian changed his mind and he disinherited Servianus in favor of a different heir. This of course meant that Servianus's grandson was also out of the picture. Only rumors survive, but it seems like they may not have handled it well. Sources even speak of an insurrection. And whatever happened, Servianus, as well as his grandson, in the end, both ended up dying. The Roman senator Cassius Dio, who's one of our few reliable sources for what happened, claims that as Servianus prepared to commit suicide over the incident, he called for incense and fire, saying that he was going to offer a prayer to the gods. And instead, this is what he said, quote, "That I am guilty of no wrong, ye, O gods, are well aware. As for Hadrian, this is my only prayer, that he may long for death, but be unable to die." And that's reported by the senator Cassius Dio in his Roman History. This is a powerful curse, and it was also a predictive curse, because Hadrian did, from AD 134, suffer greatly during those last years. He was constantly sick, he was bleeding and had some kind of consumption and dropsy, and then in AD 136, his wife Sabina died. Now, as I said earlier in the podcast, their marriage was rumored to be an unhappy one. A later biography of Hadrian even claims that the emperor poisoned his wife, and Sabina's death was no accident. Now, that is probably an exaggeration. It might be a lie, but we know that Hadrian was in deep despair as his life wound to an end. We're told that Hadrian even attempted suicide a few times. So with the emperor not long for this earth, time was running out, he needed to make a decision, and he finally settled on a man named Lucius Commodus. But this was a pretty odd choice. Lucius was a backbench senator at best, a man still quite inexperienced in his late 30s. He had no governing experience. He was not a military leader. He did have two young sons, but they were still children. And worst of all, Lucius, Hadrian's chosen successor, was about as unhealthy as Hadrian was. But Hadrian pressed forward with the adoption anyway, and members of the Senate didn't like it, but they complied, and they awarded Lucius the title of Caesar. Now, again, we just have a few rumors and a bit of gossip, but our sources claim that several elites conveniently died at this exact time, implying that maybe Hadrian was responsible. Maybe he executed some of those who were critical of his plans. We also know that several senators went into retirement at this same time. Maybe some of them were forced out by Hadrian. So Hadrian needed to get his heir some time in a position of governance, and so he whisked him away to the provinces along the Danube. This would include Dacia, and as you know from episodes 29 and 30, this was a contested region, and the new Caesar could gain some experience. He might even pick up some glory if he managed to kill a few Dacians here and there. And he did. After a year away, Lucius was pretty successful, and so he came back to Rome to report to the Senate on his accomplishments. But before he could address the conscript fathers on the floor of the Senate, he suddenly became ill, and on January 1st of AD 138, he vomited up so much blood that he died. So now Hadrian's succession plans were unraveling once again, and Hadrian, in an effort to just preserve some of what he had originally planned, decided to strike a deal with a more respected senator, one with a longer history of service, a man named Aurelius Antoninus. Now, Antoninus, however, was not given the inheritance without a condition. Antoninus was required to adopt two heirs himself. One was the eldest son of the man that just died, Lucius Commodus Caesar. And this kid's name was also Lucius. And to make the succession plan even more secure, Antoninus would be forced to betroth his young daughter to Lucius Commodus's son, Lucius. Interestingly, by the way, both of the children were probably right around the same age, 8 years old. So it'd be a little bit before they were actually married. But as I said, Hadrian also required Antoninus to adopt a second heir. And this spot would go to a teenager named Marcus Aurelius Verus. He was the nephew of Antoninus by marriage, and he was also betrothed to the late Lucius Commodus Caesar's daughter. So Hadrian essentially manufactures a family with this succession plan. But as we'll see, it actually worked, and it secured a stable transition for both the short term and several generations after. And it's a good thing Hadrian got this thing sorted out, because it was just a few months later that his reign came to an end at a resort town near Naples on July 10th of AD 138. Hadrian passed away. He had attempted numerous times to end his own life. At one point, he even ordered his physician to poison him. The physician refused, by the way, and then supposedly killed himself so that he wouldn't have to break his Hippocratic oath. So Hadrian ended up dying in great pain and suffering of whatever the illness was that had plagued him. Some historians think it was tuberculosis. Honestly, we don't really have much of a description of the symptoms, so we can't know. We do know that Hadrian's body was initially laid to rest there in the region of Campania, but then a year later, his mausoleum was finally finished, and so his body was exhumed and then cremated, and his ashes were sent to the mausoleum. Interestingly, funeral games were held at this point, and they were funded not by the imperial treasury, but were paid for out of the family inheritance of his adopted grandson, the teenager Marcus Aurelius. Marcus probably did this out of fidelity rather than love for Hadrian, and I'll tell you why I think that in just a second. And in fact, it seems like many people in Rome did not mourn Hadrian when he finally died. One later Roman writer actually said that Hadrian was, quote, hated by everyone. It seems like Hadrian executed several senators in his final years, mirroring the sense of conspiracy and maybe even paranoia that was on display during his first years in power. And so many senators remembered Hadrian with bitterness. Now, a sign of this complex legacy is probably found in the opening chapter of Marcus Aurelius's journal, this collection of writings we call the Meditations, and you can still read it to this day. Now, the Meditations opening chapter is pretty interesting, because what Marcus does is he thanks, and quite voluminously, he provides a bunch of anecdotes on many people that influenced him and helped him from his first years all the way to the end of his life. And there is one name that is conspicuously absent amid all of those who were venerated. And that, of course, is Hadrian. What's funny, though, is Hadrian's death does mark a new chapter in Roman history, but many of the marriage networks, the patronage connections, the inheritances that came out of Hadrian's reign, and also to a certain extent the reigns of Trajan and Nerva, really laid the groundwork for the next 50 years or so of Roman history. These intricate connections shaped the political landscape. The families and the men that were put in positions of leadership seemed quite competent. And so what we see is a period of relative stability. So much of the Pax Romana was not exactly peaceful. But from the death of Hadrian for several decades, it seems like we see the Roman peace finally live up to its potential. And we'll talk about how prosperous this period was on the next episode of the Pax Romana podcast.
Thanks for listening to the Pax Romana podcast. For more information, including a list of primary sources and further reading, check the show notes. Music by Red Productions and Exocore. Follow Dr. Colin Elliott on X at ProfCPE or email colin@paxromanapodcast.com. Listen to more episodes on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or just about anywhere podcasts are available. Stay tuned for the next episode of the Pax Romana podcast.